When comedian Jon Stewart accepted the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts on Sunday, he affirmed the point of the award: to honor those who use humor to shine a light on truth and justice.
Comedy doesn't change the world, but it's a bellwether. We're the banana peel in the coal mine. When a society is under threat, comedians are the ones who get sent away first. It's just a reminder to people that democracy is under threat. Authoritarians are the threat to comedy, to art, to music, to thought, to poetry, to progress, to all those things.
Critic Bob Mondello says that speech set him to thinking about how the arts, especially how the movies, have dealt with authoritarians.
In Shakespeare's day, only fools could speak truth to power. King Lear's fool, for instance, after the king gave away his kingdom to his daughters.
Thou art too much of late in the frown.
Oh, thou wast a pretty fellow, and thou hadst no need to care for her frowning. I am better than thou art now. I am a fool, but thou art nothing. Oh, yes, forsooth.
On stage, tyrants granted fools special dispensation. They could say what they wanted, because as jokesters, no one took them seriously. They served at the pleasure of the crown. And offstage, so did playwrights. The spiritual descendants of those playwrights now work in the film industry, and at least in Hollywood, they don't have to worry much about catering to tyrants, unless you count studio bosses. For the most part, depicting authoritarians as monsters is so not a problem, it's become Hollywood's default position, whether absolute power is being wielded by a Sith Lord.
Your arrogance blinds you, Master Yoda. Now you will experience the full power of the dark side.
Or by a despot who stages Hunger Games.
Why do we have a winner? Hope. It is the only thing stronger than fear.
Or by a fashion designer whose iron fist comes sheathed in a velvet glove.
I don't understand why it's so difficult to confirm an appointment.
No, I'm so sorry, Miranda. I actually did confirm last night.
The tales of your incompetence do not interest me.
Casting a jaundiced eye on those who wield power has a long history in Hollywood, dating back at least to the 1930s, when Charlie Chaplin caught a screening of the Nazi propaganda film Triumph of the Will. The film's effectiveness at portraying Adolf Hitler as almost godlike terrified most observers, but Chaplin reportedly cracked up at director Leni Riefenstahl's excesses. As his little tramp already had the toothbrush mustache, he figured two could play at this game, and in his satirical 1940 comedy, The Great Dictator, he mocked the German Führer by playing Adenoid Hinkel, the Fooey of Tomania.
Hinkel the dictator ruled the nation with an iron fist. Under the new emblem of the double cross, liberty was banished, free speech was suppressed, and only the voice of Hinkel was heard.
Chaplin said in his autobiography that he couldn't have made the film funny if he'd known then the full extent of Nazi evil, but ridiculing Hitler as a clown worked for audiences. Chaplin wasn't the first comic to mock strongmen in an era noted for strongmen. In 1933, Duck Soup cast Groucho Marx as a goofy tyrant, Rufus T. Firefly, in a satirical look at how nations were dealing with the Great Depression.
We've got to start looking for a new treasurer.
But you appointed one last week.
That's the one I'm looking for.
And astonishingly, that same year, the entirely serious drama Gabriel Over the White House offered an approving look at a president who thought tyranny was the ideal way to lift the U.S. economy.
I shall assume full responsibility for the government.
Mr. President, this is dictatorship.
Senator Langham, words do not frighten me.
But the United States of America is a democracy.
Gabriel Over the White House was financed by right-wing newspaper magnate William Randolph Hearst and admired by no less a progressive than President Franklin Roosevelt. And it made a tidy little profit at the box office, preaching fascism.
If what I plan to do in the name of the people makes me a dictator, then it is a dictatorship based on Jefferson's definition of democracy. A government for the greatest good of the greatest number.
After World War II, this notion of a benign dictatorship couldn't play anymore for most audiences, and Hollywood fell back on time-honored notions, none more time-honored than Roman emperors persecuting Christians. Peter Ustinov's vain Nero, for instance, in Quo Vadis.
You are right, Petronius. How they love me.
In the 1950s, when Hollywood needed a despot tamed, it called on Deborah Carr. Nero was a lost cause, so while he fiddled and Rome burned, Carr set about taming Robert Taylor's jerk of a Roman general.
uniting and civilizing the world under one power, have to spill a little blood to do it.
There's a gentler and more powerful way of doing that, without bloodshed and war.
A few years later, she did her best to tame Yul Brynner's petulant Siamese monarch in The King and I.
You are a very difficult woman.
Perhaps so, Your Majesty.
But you'll observe care that head shall never be higher than mine. When I shall sit, you shall sit. When I shall kneel, you shall kneel. Etc., etc., etc.
It took more to bring him around than whistling a happy tune, but she did it. These were hardly realistic portrayals, but over the next few decades, filmmakers increasingly gave us films about the ousting of tyrants that were realistic. The struggle against Greece's military junta in the film Z. The wrenching last months of Argentina's military dictatorship in the Oscar-winning The Official Story. A feel-good film about the Chilean campaign to oust Augusto Pinochet in No. But perhaps no film about a despot hit harder than one set in the East African nation of Uganda. In The Last King of Scotland, Forrest Whitaker played the corrupt general turned brutal dictator Idi Amin, taking audiences from his populist early days.
In my heart, I am a simple man.
All the way to the paranoid reign of terror that earned him the moniker The Butcher of Uganda.
I am surrounded by traitors. The preachers say I am a madman. The Americans, I am a cannibal. These are lies!
What nearly all these films have in common is a conviction that authoritarians must ultimately fail. In fact, way back in 1940, that's the sentiment that Charlie Chaplin used to end The Great Dictator. After clowning for 2 hours, he addressed the camera as a lowly barber who had, in an unlikely plot twist, switched places with the fooey, and in his own voice, without any comic flourishes at all, he spoke for several minutes from the heart.
But I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another.
It's hard to imagine today how audiences received this speech in the run-up to World War II. Critics thought its lack of comedy broke the film's spell, but it's undeniably arresting as a capper to what would become Chaplin's biggest commercial success. Something I thought about when I heard Jon Stewart's acceptance speech for the Mark Twain Prize, which you'll be able to watch for yourself on PBS on June 21st. Stewart has built his career on directly and sincerely addressing his audience, leaving jokes aside at times, saying things like this.
Is comedy going to survive in this new moment? I've got news for you. Comedy survives every moment.
Even ones where madmen run the show and laughs catch in your throat. I'm Bob Mandela.